Good morning and welcome to the fourth presentation. And it's going to be in two parts. First is the friendship between Jesus and the beloved disciple. And in the second part, we'll look at Paul. Firstly, I'm not assuming that the beloved disciple is John, the brother of James, the son of Zebedee. That's the traditional connection that's made. But I think all scholars today question that. And so I'm not presuming that. Which means that I can't look at the gospel and look at Jesus and his relationship with John. So I'm only going to limit myself to where the beloved disciple is mentioned. The beloved disciple is the disciple who is behind the fourth gospel. It relies on his witness and his preaching and his wonderful love of Jesus. So that's the one we're looking at. The author, in that sense, of the fourth gospel. The beloved disciple is first mentioned in the fourth gospel, I'll call it the Gospel of John, in the Last Supper scene, John 13:23. One of his disciples, we read, the one whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to Jesus. Now the word used there, I've got the English lettering of the Greek, Michelle mentioned this yesterday, is agape, the noun, or agapao, agapan, the verb. So let's look at that first, because it's not the verb, it's not the word of friendship yet. The one whom Jesus loved. Agape is regularly translates the Hebrew, in case you could be, some of you would be familiar with this, hesed, one of the key qualities of God. And agape is the Greek. So hesed means covenant. A hesed, it could be entering between a husband and a wife. That's hesed. It could be between two tribes of Israel coming into a covenant, an agreement. It could be between two nations. They may not be friends, but they may come to a compromise covenant whereby if you don't attack us, we won't attack you. And trade between the two could happen. When it applies to God, and that's getting us where we are here now, covenant isn't the perfect word for it. It's more just a commitment of God to us, independent of what we do. It's an unconditional, faithful commitment of God to his people, to you, to me. Now, love can be offered, but not received, because it doesn't force its way, it's free. So, for the love to actually effect something in the one loved, the disciple whom Jesus loved, then there has to be a welcoming of that committed self-gift from God. And the Torah is God's, as they saw it, and beautifully, the Torah was God's way of showing us how we welcome God's love, our behaviour that's necessary for that. It's not a condition of that. It's not offered conditionally, but it's welcomed conditionally, of course. So that's why the commandments are there, etc. How to live so as to receive the blessing and the unconditional love that God offers. So back to our text. This disciple is called by his disciples, who are responsible for the gospel, the community of the beloved disciple. Of course, Jesus loved all the apostles, but in their view, it's like the founder of a religious order in one way. We call them the founder or the foundress. Well, he's the one God loved, Jesus loved. And he's reclining next to Jesus. And that icon we've looked at quite a bit is picturing that. So let's look at the Last Supper a little bit, stay with it for a while. Before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from the world and go to the Father. Having loved his own, again, agapao, loved, given himself to them unconditionally, without any, and totally faithfully. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he'd come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into the basin and began to wash his disciples' feet. A loving service, including, of course, the disciple whom Jesus loved. He's there as well. And then Jesus says, if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, so Jesus is like a slave, in that, or a servant, a nicer word, but the Greek is actually slave, household slave. Jesus is just doing the work of a slave. Why? Because their feet are dusty and it's a hot evening and he wants them to be comfortable. There's no great deal. He just does it naturally. He'd hope that we would do it naturally too. If I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should wash one another's. I've given you an example. You should do as I've done. This is the way to love, says Jesus. Give yourself to people in their need. That's picked up by Paul and the Synoptic Gospels as well. At the Last Supper, John doesn't mention, I'm saying John, you know who I mean, the author of the Gospel, he doesn't mention the Eucharist. He's already meditated on that beautifully in chapter 6. Here he's getting to the essence of the meal. And the essence of the meal he sees in the washing of feet. Do this in, we say it at Mass, do this in memory of me. Do what? Meet every Saturday evening and have Mass? Yes, but it's deeper than that. He wants us to do what he's doing. As he's just said, he wants us to wash each other's feet. He wants us to serve each other out of love. He wants us to commit ourselves to others in love. That's what he wants us to do in memory of him. And of course we celebrate that ritually in the Eucharist. In the letter from the same community written a little later, we know love, agape, we know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, so that we may lay down our lives for one another. In fact, in the Gospel of John, the laying down of the clothes, the garments, and the taking of them up again is an allusion to the death and resurrection of Jesus. The gift of life, and then it's received back. Jesus was troubled in spirit and he declared, "Very truly, I tell you, one of you will betray me." The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he was speaking. And now, once again, we introduce the first introduction of the beloved disciple. One of his disciples, says his community, the one that Jesus loved, was reclining next to Jesus, and Simon Peter motioned to him to ask Jesus of whom he was speaking. So, while reclining next to Jesus, the disciple asked him, "Lord, who is it?" And Jesus answered, "It's the one to whom I give this piece of bread when I've dipped it in the dish." Let's Let's move to Matthew just for once to look at what happened here, because it's relevant to our topic. Matthew writes at last, after this scene that we've just read, Jesus said, "After I'm raised up, I'll go ahead of you to Galilee." Here's the faithful love of Jesus, revealing the faithful love of God. "I'll go ahead of you. I'll be there for you. I'll be with you always. So I'll go ahead of you to Galilee." Peter said to him, "Although all become deserters, because of you, I'll never desert you." Said out of love, but also out of naivety and a lot of lack of self-knowledge. "Oh, whatever the others do, Jesus, don't worry, I'll never desert you." And Jesus said to him, "Very truly I tell you, this very night before the cock crows, you will deny me 3 times. And pardon me, 3 times doesn't mean one more than two or one less than four. 3 times always means you persist in denying me. It won't be just a slip up or a kind of hesitant thing. You will continually and persistently 3 times. Just like Jesus in the agony of the garden, 3 times he prays, meaning he just kept on praying. And Peter said to him, quite self-confident, sadly, "Even though I must die with you, I will not deny you." A beautiful thing to say, and really meant, and very loving, but as I said, not yet aware. Back to John's Gospel. "I give you a new commandment." Very important word, commandment. We're going back to the Torah. We're going back to God's revelation of how it is that we welcome love. How are we going to be so that we're embracing the embrace that's given us? What do we need to do? Well, Jesus said, I'm going to give you a new commandment. Love one another. Again, agape. We haven't come to phileo yet. Agape, love one another just as I've loved you, you should love one another. By this everyone will know that you're my disciples. How beautiful it would be if we who want to be disciples of Jesus, and like Peter, we're fragile, but we'd want to, and we wouldn't be here. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we lived like this? How attractive that proved to be in the early centuries of the church. The Christian church was amazing. I mean, people couldn't believe it. It wasn't just for men or just for women. It wasn't for the rich or for the poor. It wasn't this or that, or it wasn't military or secular. It was all their religions were all in different groups. Here you've got this extraordinary phenomenon of Jews and Gentiles, men and women, rich and poor, all coming as equals to receive, to share each other's company and love and faith at the Eucharist. "By this, everyone will know you're my disciples if you have this love for one another." If only Muhammad had known a beautiful Christian community, we may have had the whole of Arabia could have become Christian rather than... This is from a letter of the same community. "This is his commandment," say the disciples after the death of the beloved disciple. "This is his commandment. We should believe in the name of the Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another just as he commanded us. All who obey his commandments abide in him, That's not a condition. That's a necessary relationship for welcoming love, the command. And he abides in them, and by this we know that he abides in us by the Spirit he has given us. Beloved, again from the letter, let us love one another. This is all agape, with that love of God, that commitment, that self-gift that is not conditional, but faithful. Because love is from God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Beloved, again, since God loved us so much, we ought to love one another. No one's ever seen God. But if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is perfected in us. So just as people saw God by seeing Jesus, saw God revealed in the human heart and mind and words of Jesus, so now Jesus is with us mysteriously by giving us his Spirit. The Christian community, if people see us, they'll see God. Don't let your hearts back to the supper. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe is a beautiful English word. It's in fact better than the Greek to get across the point here. Oops. I don't particularly want to do that. You might want me to do it, but I'll leave it. I think if I just leave it, it stops, doesn't it? It's made up of two words, a rich English language, be, of course, and lief, liefde in Dutch, liebe in German. Lief means love. To believe means to be in love. So, yes, it has an intellectual content, of course, but it's actually a commitment. Don't let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe in me, says Jesus. In my Father's house there are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again and I'll take you to myself. At the moment of death, obviously, so that where I am, you too may be. Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? I know I touched on this a couple of days ago, but I want to go back to it. This communion that Jesus has with his God, his Abba, his Imma, that's his identity, that's his core of his being. That's who he is, and he wants us to believe that. Again, the letter, God is love. If you abide in love, then you abide in God, and God abides in you. And then the extraordinary gift given us. I'm not yet talking about friendship. I'm talking about love, agape. If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. I hope you can see the link there. In fact, there's an older English word from command that it comes from, which you know very well, but it's an older word. It's the word commend. Just change the A to an E. So Jesus is commanding, meaning he's entrusting, he's commending something. He wants to sit at the well again with a million people. He wants to cure the blind, whatever way we're blind, and etc. So he's got to do it through us. So he's commending, he's saying, look, there's one thing I really want you to do, and one thing I beg you to do, and one thing I'm giving you to do, and that is, I'll ask, love one another, of course, then if you love me, if you welcome my love, I'll ask the Father, and he'll give you another advocate to be with you forever. The Spirit of Truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees nor knows the Spirit. You know the Spirit, because the Spirit abides in you and you and is in you. And then he goes on, this is the Trinitarian mystery, the heart of all mysticism. I will not leave you orphans. I am coming to you. Yes, the Spirit is coming, and God, my dear Father, will send you the Spirit, that is the love that I have with God and God with me, Jesus is saying. Well, I'm coming to you. If you love me, you keep my word, and my Father will love you, and we will come to you and make our home in you. So we're at the deepest point of agape here, love. God's unconditional love, totally welcomed, and then entering into our whole being. If you love me, you'll carry out what I command you. And you'll be loved by my Father, and I love you, and I'll reveal myself to you, says Jesus. And there he's revealing himself in that icon to the beloved disciple. As the Father has loved me, I have loved you. Abide in my love. In other words, be the beloved disciple. We're all called to that. Jesus has already spoken of his love for us. Now he tells us that the love which he has for us has its origin in the love which his Father has for him. It's the human expression of the intimate communion which is the very being of God. God is community, communion in love, self-giving. With the beloved disciple, we're being invited to share Jesus' divinity. Jesus' divinity is his communion with the Father. And at Mass every day, we pour the water into the cup with the wine and we say we want to share his divinity. He shares our humanity, all of it. We want to share his divinity. In other words, we want to share his communion with the Father. If you keep my commandments, you'll abide in my love, just as I've kept my Father's commandments. Jesus has responded faithfully to this unconditional commitment of God. At last, a member of the human race has opened himself totally to this self-giving God. And now we come, we've touched it a few times, or to the first time, to this beautiful word, phileo, friendship. This is my commandment, that you love, again, agape, one another as I have loved you, that you commit yourself to each other in love, in God's love. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. Please note, it doesn't mean I'll only be a friend of you if you do certain things. That cuts right across the whole meaning of Jesus, of the agape when it becomes friendship. No, it's unconditionally offered, but you can't receive it unless you open your heart to it, because love will never push in or dominate or control or whatever. It's, well, we all know that, it has to be welcomed. So if you do what I command you, if you love one another the way I've loved you, then you will know this friendship. I'm not now calling you servants. In a way, he was calling them servants when he was washing their feet and he was telling them to do what he did, wash each other's feet. Be what a servant is in the home. Serve each other. Yes, but no, you see, I'm saying much more than that. I'm not now saying I'm not now calling you servants, because the servant doesn't know what the master's doing. I'm calling you friends, because I've made known to you everything that I've heard from my Father. Now, Michelle touched on this yesterday. I want to go through it again very briefly, because it's the only other time, as far as I'm aware, where the words agape and phileo are in the one context, and they're in the same gospel, Gospel of John, chapter 21. Just to see if, as best I'm able to anyhow, see what's happening here between this obvious agape, God's uncommitted, faithful gift of love, which we're then picking up and sharing, and this concept of our retreat, friendship. You know this scene. When they'd finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Poor Peter had said at the Last Supper, we just did it, "If the others all desert you, don't worry, Jesus, I'll be there." So, kind of, I love you. He thinks he loves Jesus more than anybody. And Jesus now checks with him, because something's happened in the meantime, which you know. And he says, "Do you love me more than these? Are you committed to me more than them? Are you faithful more than them? Can I trust you to be faithful?" And look at Peter's response. "Lord," he said, "you know I'm your friend. Phileo. You know I'm your friend." I think he's saying, I can't guarantee that I love you faithfully, because I didn't yesterday and I mightn't tomorrow. So he's learned a bit of humility. He's learned to be a bit more hesitant, but he's guaranteeing phileo, friendship, caring, being fond of someone in that rich sense of giving oneself to another, not dependent on them and their qualities and their attraction to me, or their like being like me, or the two of us being able to do things together in a good way. That's all good, but that's not what he's talking about. This is the gift of self to another that creates the environment, if they want to respond, for them to find themselves, see who they really are, learn how beautiful they are, and then become friends too, even with me if they want to, with the one giving. So, "Lord, you know I'm your friend." A second time Jesus asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And notice how Jesus has left the other bit out. More than the others. "But do you love me? Are you committed to me? Will you be faithful to me?" And again, Peter beautifully, humbly, but lovingly says, "You know I'm your friend. You know I care for you. You know I feel for you. You know I do anything for you. You know I want you to be you. And I'm grateful for you." All of that, you know, means. Then, and very movingly, Jesus said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John," and notice the change in Jesus' question. He moves from agape to phileo. "Are you my friend? Do you love me in that sense?" And that breaks Peter's heart. Peter felt hurt because the third time he asked him a different question. He didn't mind being asked about agape because he realised he had a lot to learn and he'd failed. "But don't question my phileo," he says to Jesus. He said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know I'm your friend. Please don't doubt that." So what's happening here? I think agape is what we're all called to. It's the source of everything. It's God's unconditional love given to us. And all the texts so far have been about loving with God's love. Friendship is a quality of that agape which reaches out to others in a way of, we'll call it friendship, I can't think of a better word, a way that creates the space for them to become who they are, to learn how much love they've got to give, whether to the person loving them or to other people, it's all, or to God. But it's about that warmth of friendship that enables people on a human level to learn to love. The second scene that I take you to, obviously very briefly, the second time the beloved disciple is mentioned is at the foot of the cross. And there you've got a couple of, they're actually paintings done by Patrick O'Carrigan, an MSC priest who's an artist, he died some years ago. And there you can see the beloved disciple and the mother at the foot of the cross, and he's witnessing the piercing of the heart of Jesus. Meanwhile, writes this gospel, standing near the cross of Jesus were, there's four women there, his mother, the mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, so these are all relations of Jesus through Mary or Joseph, and Mary Magdalene, not a relation, family relation, but couldn't keep her away. So there you've got those four. And when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing beside her, he said to his mother, "Woman, here is your son." He said to the disciple, "Here's your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her into his own. Doesn't qualify that, his own heart, his own home, his own care, you've got to add the noun yourself. He took her into his own. And then the scene, one of the disciples of the soldiers pierced Jesus' side with a spear, and at once blood and water came out. Jules Chevalier wrote in 1900, the founder of the Daughters of Our Lady of the Sacred Heart and the Missionaries of the Sacred Heart, "From the heart of Jesus pierced on Calvary, I see a new world coming forth," said George Chevalier. "A great, a life-giving world." This almost sounds like some Pope Francis. And this has got to keep going, this has to, because this is all possible. "A world which the Church has to perpetuate on the whole earth." Of course the Church has sinners in it. Jesus ate with sinners all the time. Peter was a sinner and so was Judas. I'm sure the others had their share of it. So sinners in the Church shouldn't trouble any of us. Otherwise, where am I going to go? Where are you going to go? So sin is, but the Church has to be seen as a, which it is seen as, if we look deeply, a loving mother, a loving community of care and all the rest of it that is all over the place. It's beautiful. It has to be seen as the body of Christ. And of course we've got to keep wanting it to be the body of Christ and checking that it is and repenting and embracing and all the rest of it and forgiving. But that's the Church's job. And finally on John, and it's a mysterious scene. It's a contact with the risen Christ now. So far we've just looked at the Last Supper, foot of the cross. But here's something after the resurrection. And to do this properly, of course, I or anyone else would have to do it very slowly and very carefully. And I haven't got time, so I'll just do it as best I can. The mystery of the contact with the risen Christ is, the language is highly symbolic. It's beautifully artistic, it's It's not prose in any sense. Early on the first day of the week, when it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the disciple whom Jesus loved. Here he is again. She said to them, "They've taken the Lord out of the tomb and we don't know where they've laid him." Then Peter and the other disciples set out and went towards the tomb, and the two were running together, but the other disciple, the beloved disciple, outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in and he saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he didn't go in. There's a lot of theology in this scene. He's waiting for a leader to lead. Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. And this is the point of this passage. Then the other disciple who reached the tomb first also went in. He saw and he believed. The lover sees in a way that no one else can. Well, you know that. So the lover, the beloved one, sees and believes. So we're invited to be the beloved and pray that we see and believe, be in that love. Then, and I won't do this, there's a disciples go fishing, and these are the ones that go fishing. It's a tantalizing verse. Simon Peter was one of them. Thomas the twin was another. Nathaniel was another. And James and John were two of the others. But there were two others as well. So one of them is the beloved disciple. Is the beloved disciple John? Or is the beloved disciple one of the two others? So we don't have the evidence to be so sure of that, so we stay with. But this is the point of what I'm sharing with you. They have this miraculous catch of fish. And again, it's the lover that sees. The disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It's the Lord." So that concludes my first little session with you.